I subtitled this "The Way, God's Way is Not for Sissies," because as we'll go through this study, we're going to see that it's not for people that don't want to do anything. It's not for people that just want to lay back. It's a specific thing that God is doing. And the way is, I believe, you can be shown to be a particular, not just a walk, but sort of like Nieves was saying, a frame of mind, too. But before we get started on this, we want to go back and look at some of the things we've talked about before. And one of them is that in our salvation cycle that we're trying to show go through here, we see that the first thing we need to do is have a recognition of bondage and sin. And part of that is realizing that we are under covenant, that we're bound by covenant to do certain things. And so with covenant comes responsibility. Third thing we realize is that once we find that we are in bondage, we need someone to redeem us. We need someone to take and buy us out of bondage, and that is the role of the kinsman redeemer. Going on, then we find that there is a point in our life where God gives us salvation. And it's not our concept of salvation that some of us have been taught, because salvation is being set free and your enemies being destroyed, and then you growing in adoration for the person that has set you free and killed your enemy. That is the biblical definition of salvation. And then we went on, last week we talked about baptism and how baptism is an outward sign that you have been saved. I didn't say this last week, I just forgot, but baptism is not salvation. Baptism is what saved people do. And we've also talked about how there's more than one baptism, and that it's in the Hebrew concept of baptism, you may be baptized once a week, once a month, almost always once a year, but it's certainly more than one time in your life, because you realize over and over again that you've been saved from the enemy over and over again. And so this next thing we're going to be talking about is Torah, but not necessarily Torah. I mean, we're not going to get right into Torah because we talk about that every week. Next time, we're going to be talking about repentance, and then after that, we'll be talking about faith, and that will end up this series. Okay, so the children of Israel had crossed the Red Sea, and they were beginning their walk. And, you know, the children of Israel probably didn't realize certain things about what was getting ready to happen to them. One thing, they didn't realize that they were going to have to go into this big body of water and actually go through it. And if they had known that ahead of time, they probably wouldn't have done so. God sort of just, you know, revealed these things to them as it went along. And then it says when they got to the sea that God actually sent them into the sea. God didn't beckon them into the sea. It actually says that he sent them. If you look at this phrase here, and then Yahweh said to Moshe, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward." And the word there for go is the Hebrew word nasa, which actually means go, go. Not come, but go. He was just pushing them basically into the sea to get them to move on. And so they went into the sea, and of course we know what all happened from that point on. And we know that as they went in, they went in as slaves, and they came out the other side as free men. And in essence, they were, you might say, born again. But one thing we've realized is that they did not, at that point, they did not go directly to the land. And I'm sure that they probably thought they were going to go directly to the land. And as we're talking about these things, sort of relate those things to our own personal salvation and our own personal thinking about the goal that's ahead. Sometimes we want to go directly ahead and we don't want all the little trials. And this is exactly what happened to the Israelites. In Exodus 13, it says, "When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, 'Lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt.' But God led the people around by way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle." Now, as we look at a map of this area, the Middle Eastern area, they were over in Goshen, and where they were, you know, the nearest place for them to go would have been to the Gaza, the area of the Gaza, which is, everybody I think knows where the Gaza Strip is. It's sort of delineated up there. That distance is about 80 to 100 miles. Now, when I was in Boy Scouts, we used to take and travel the Appalachian Trail, and on a good day, we could make 20, 25 miles. I mean, you're hoofing it when you go that fast, because a man usually walks, or a person usually walks about 3 and a half miles an hour. So in an 8-hour day, you can go 24 miles, 25 miles. We went with backpacks, and the Appalachian Trail is pretty calm, or pretty tame, so we were able to make some good time. But if you figure the Israelites, and 2 million people trying to take and traverse this area going up to the area of the Gaza, you know, it's going to take them at least 3, probably 4, maybe even 5 days to get that far. And so think about what would have happened if they had gone directly to the red, or directly to Israel. You know, God says they would have been fearful of war and they would have turned back. Well, if we realize what they actually did, you know, they took another route. 3 days out, what did they do? They started rebelling. They got upset, they got discouraged because they had no water. So just think, if they were going directly to Gaza and they got two-thirds of the way there and they started getting hungry and tired and no water, and then somehow they went ahead and made it to Gaza, and then who would have been in Gaza? Well, who met the Israelites when they tried to go in the book of Numbers? What did they see when they went in? They saw giants, right? Okay, so here you just imagine if you had all these people going the direct route, just slaves out of Egypt, not knowing how to really perform as free people, go up there hungry, tired, discouraged, and then they meet these giants. What are they going to do? They're going to turn around and go back. So this is precisely what God didn't want them to do. And in order to prepare them for coming into the land, he took them a different route. So he took them down, and we, you know, there was a lot of discussion as to if they crossed the Red Sea or actually crossed the Gulf of Aqaba. But say they did cross the Red Sea, and then they headed down the Sinai Peninsula. And of course, we know that Mount Sinai is not where it shows on that map. But they headed down there, and their stops along the way provided situations and places for God to begin to reveal himself to them. One of the things that God had to show them was that they were not really better off while they were in Egypt. Remember, every time they complained, they talked about the good food and all of the water and all the security they had while they were in Egypt. And so God had to basically take them out and show them that he could do the same thing. So they go along there, and they look, and they come upon, the first stop was Marah, where they were very thirsty, and then God gave them water. And he introduced the fact that, you know, I can provide the water for you. Don't worry about the water. I can provide the water for you. You may have gotten water over there in Egypt, you know, all you wanted, but I can do the same thing. I can take bad water and make it good. So he satisfied their need right there. He went on, they went on a little bit further, and of course, that's when they ran out of food and they wanted something to eat. And so God rained down manna from heaven for them. And in the process, God was saying, you know, I can give you food. I can give you all the food in the world. In fact, I don't even have to raise the food. I don't have to do anything. I can just make it come out of the sky. I can grow money on trees. You know, I can do these things for you without any labor involved. In fact, you know, for at least on my part, now, you know, they had to take and gather it. But this was a way for God to show them that their situation in Egypt was not that good. and that he is able to do better for them than the Pharaoh was able to do. And then, of course, they went on, and eventually they came into Rephidim, and in Rephidim is where the Amalekites came and attacked them from the back, from the rear. And then they had to fight their own battle there. You know, they armed them. God had armed them. Remember, it says when they came off out of the Red Sea, it says that he armed them for battle. They came out armed for battle. So he had already armed them. And so when it came to the Rephidim and the Amalekites, then God actually had them fight their own battle. He could have obviously fought it for them, but he had them go out and actually wage war. And so what God was showing them was, though they had food, water, and security in Egypt, God was going to be able to take and give them food, water, and security themselves, but something was going to be required of them, but not nearly as much as required of them there in Egypt. Because in Egypt they were slaves and all they knew was work. Come home and eat and go to work, you know. And so God was showing them that he could do these things for them. But what's more, what God wanted to do is he wanted to build a relationship with them. He wanted them to see that not only was he feeding them, but he as a God was not like the gods that they were used to while they were in Egypt. Because the gods in Egypt, all these gods from the Middle East, the pagan gods were gods that basically hated their subject and they had to be pacified in order to keep them from killing their subjects. Well, God was showing them, our God, or Yahweh, let's say, was showing them that I'm different. And, you know, I love you and I want to take care of you and I'm going to be better for you than what they did, or than what the gods were in Egypt. And so God set them on a journey in order to understand that. This journey and this way that they followed was all designed to help them to understand God much better. One of the things we need to notice, or we want to notice, as we look at the walk that the Israelites took once they left Egypt and on their way to Mount Sinai, is that God did not give them the Ten Commandments at the end of the Red Sea. When they came out of Egypt, they crossed the Red Sea, God did not flood them with all the commandments. And that's, you know, if you look at the Ten Commandments in that passage there that we just talked about a few minutes ago, besides the Ten Commandments, there's at least 45 different Torah commandments given above and beyond that. And within those, there's sometimes two or three different little small mitzvot associated with it. So God didn't give that all to the Israelites at the very beginning when they came out of the Red Sea. Obviously, they knew some things. God had given them some of the commandments concerning the Passover while they were still back in Egypt. And God revealed the Sabbath to them along the way. But that was basically all the law that God gave to them as they went through. And another thing that we need to want to see is that when God led them along this path in this way, what actually led them along the way? Was it Moses actually leading them along the way? What was it that led them? Can you remember? It was the cloud. There was a cloud that led them dirt by day and fire by night, and Moses followed the cloud. So God was actually revealing himself by being a leader and a provider to them. And he wasn't a law giver right from the get-go in this. He wanted to develop this relationship with them before he gave them the law. So what is the word? The word that we use for way, that God uses for way, is a very interesting word. And that word is derek. Derek. It's a dalet, resh, and a kaf. And it means a journey or a going. And if we were going to say the journey, how would we say it in Hebrew? Ha-derek. Ha-derek. Yeah, ha-derek. So it's a very interesting word. It means a journey and a going. It's Strong's number 1870. And it comes from this word right here, which is spelled with the same three Hebrew letters, darak. Darak. And it means to tread with a purpose. It's the word is related to, and actually the word defines the type of walk you would have if you were in a wine press to make wine and pressing the grapes. And that would not be just a walk in the park, would it? If you've ever seen anybody do that, I haven't, but I've seen things, you know, on TV and stuff, and it's more of a like this, right? Every step along the way is an intentional step with purpose. And it's the same word that's used here in Malachi 4, verses 2 and 3, where it says, "But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and you shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall, and you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, says Yahweh of hosts." And so if we have the opportunity to tread down the wicked, what are we going to do? We're just going to shuffle along? No, I would dare say, I can think of a few people right now, maybe all of you guys can too, that you would intentionally, if God said, go tread down the wicked, then you would intentionally tread some of these people down, wouldn't you? And it wouldn't be just a shuffle. It would be intentional steps. Okay? These are God's words. They're not mine. So, this is the thought, though, that we want to convey. So this is the word way is a comes from a root word that is a verb. It's a walk. Actually doing something. So going back to our story here, it's not a casual walk because, like I said, in Marah, God showed them that if they would walk in His words and walk in His ways, they would not have the plagues of Egypt. And then we go on and we get to the area there where they were able to gather the manna. They actually had to do something. They had to gather the manna themselves. It wasn't going to be given to them anymore like it was while they were in Egypt. They didn't have food just handed to them. They had to actually go out and pick the food up and bring it in. Of course, this is the time that God revealed the Sabbath to them, which is significant because when God revealed the Sabbath to the Israelites, it was very clear that it was the Sabbath. There is no question about it. There is no question about, do we start Sabbath first thing in the morning, or is the Sabbath dictated by the moon or anything like that? God very clearly established when the Sabbath was, so there was no question about these things to the people. Going on, we see that the Amalekite, or the God brought the water from the wine. I mean, the water from the wine, the water from the rock at that time, and showed them that, you know, He could provide all of these things for them. They don't need to worry about this at all. Next thing that happened was them fighting the Amalekites. And then, like I said earlier, the Amalekite situation there, God could have just driven Amalek away, but He instead chose to have Israel actually do something. Actually go out there and fight these people themselves. And I don't know if there's any recorded deaths by the Israelites. It doesn't say, I don't think. But we might assume that there were, because we do know that whenever the arms of Moses were down, the Amalekites prevailed. And when they raised the hands up, then Israel prevailed. And so here you have Hur and Aaron holding up the arms of Moses. And then the next thing we saw along the way, which while they're still on the journey, the next thing we saw is Jethro coming on the scene and establishing a way to basically lessen the workload of Moses. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, so I won't get into that right now. So on the way to Egypt, they found living waters, bread from heaven, support of their battles, and no longer having to act like slaves, or they were no longer allowed to act like slaves, but they must search out they must, you know, take care of things themselves. And I would submit to you that by the time they got to Mount Horeb and Jethro coming along, that they actually had to begin searching for some of the meaning of the things that God was revealing to them. When they got to the mountain, when they got to Mount Sinai, you know, God needed a people who had a change in their way of thinking. They could no longer, like I said, they could no longer think like slaves. They had to think like a people who managed their own destiny, who you know, had a purpose in life more so than what they had back in Egypt. In Egypt, they had no purpose in life. And so God had to give them this sense of purpose and all of that so that he could have formed for himself a bride that he could marry. Because at giving of the Torah, they, he actually did give them, you know, a ketubah, a marriage contract, you might say, that if they joined into it, then they were going to have to act like a bride. And Israel just wasn't at, you know, ready for it when they came out of Egypt. That's why they had to go through all of these steps along the way. So for us, what can we learn from all of this? This is the point that we want to get at. What can we learn from all this? One, God has put us on a journey. We're not out here just casually walking along. He's on a journey, and especially for people who are new to this walk, they need to realize that they are on a journey that's going to take them not directly to the promised land. It's going to be a long journey. It's going to be maybe out of the way than what they may have expected. The Hebrew Roots movement has a very high turnover rate. I know of a number of people since I've gotten out of the churches and have gotten into to this particular Hebraic type walk that have started in this and then have left it. There's even some teachers that have been in this that have actually left this walk. It's got a very, very high turnover rate. And, you know, you wonder why. You wonder why people who would come out of the church and give up Christmas and give up all of these things and basically turn their back on a lot of their friends in many ways, why is it that after just a little bit of time they would get discouraged and they would return back to what they came out of? You know, why would they return back to Egypt? Huh? Because they're Israelites, yeah. Because they're Israelites. You know, it's good for people when they're new to this to realize the pitfalls along the way and realize what's going on, what God's expecting, and maybe what God doesn't expect from you right from the get-go. And there again, the children of Israel probably didn't realize when they were leaving the land, when they were leaving Egypt, that they weren't going directly to the land. And maybe that's good for us sometimes to not know about all the problems that we might face along the way. But realize that when we do start our journey, that journey, every step along that way, along that journey, is designed by God to provide something specific for us in order to help us to grow in understanding and faith in the one who is actually leading us down that path. So, God's way isn't hard. What we need to do is we need to start looking for the paths. We need to look, as we're new into this walk, we need to look for the ancient paths. Just like Jeremiah 6 says, this says Yahweh, stand by the roads and look and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is and walk in it and find rest for your souls. So God, when He is starting to work with us, what we want to search for is the ancient ways. Because the ancient ways are going to be the ones that provide rest for our souls. If we want to ever make it to the promised land, which is the rest, then the path is the ancient paths. And unfortunately, in our society, in our Christian culture, we think that it's a new path that we need to follow. But that's not at all what God says. So how do we get on the ancient paths and not get discouraged and start walking back? Because the ancient path, the most well-known ancient path, is the path that the Israelites took from Mount from the Red Sea to Mount Sinai. If we ever talk about a walk or a road, even though we don't know the road, but if you were to ever ask, you know, what is the road that people took, or the road that a whole group of people took, people would say from from Red Sea to Mount Sinai. So that's probably the ancient, or one of the ancient paths that we need to associate with. So a person, say, starting in this walk, they realize they need to go on the ancient paths, and they're going to start having questions. And what I submit that a person should do when they're starting on this path is to not jump into it and start running down the path. Start taking things rather slowly as they learn more about the walk. But there's a reason why a lot of people jump into this. And there again, we're asking the question, why do people fall out of the Messianic movement so quickly? I think one of the reasons is because people get on the path, they discover the path, and they start running down the path instead of taking it slowly. They start looking at people who are further down the path than they are. They may say, they may look at a group or a person or a family, and they'll say, oh, this family has no Sabbath issues. This seemingly no Sabbath issues. This family, they don't have any job issues or anything like that. So people are going to take and jump and want to be just like this other person. And it's not time yet. These people have been on the path for a little bit longer than they have. And so you should take and just start going slowly down this. Shouldn't compare yourselves with each other, because comparing is what causes people to want to move further down the road than what they are. And then there's always this fear that, you know, I'm so new to this, and you've been in it for so long, how am I ever going to measure up? You know, it's a common question. It's sort of like Angie and I felt when we first came to this home study that we had. I think the very first time we went out to it was out at Silty's house. And, you know, we felt so inadequate there. We didn't feel like we would ever measure up. We didn't feel like we'd ever be able to understand things like some of these other people, like they did. So get on the path, and we need to go slowly. Joseph Good, back 10 years ago, he was up doing a seminar one time, and he made this analogy, and it was about a rabbi or a young rabbi and his older rabbi. And this is basically the way it went. There is this young rabbi who thought he was pretty sharp in the scripture, thought he was pretty smart, but he really wasn't too sure about how he stood with God. And so he went to his rabbi and says, "Rabbi, there's a ladder that goes up to heaven." And he says, "On this ladder are three men. One man is at the very bottom of the ladder. Another man is about halfway up the ladder. And the third guy is almost at the very top of the ladder, almost all the way to heaven." And he says, "Rabbi, which of these men is most pleasing to God?" And of course, the rabbi was trying to take and see if he, thinking that he was the guy way up the ladder, would be the one most pleasing to God. Well, the old rabbi tells the young rabbi, he says, "You know, I can't answer your question." And the young rabbi says, "Why?" And he says, "Well, you haven't given me enough information. I need to know more about these men." And the young rabbi says, "Well, I told you, there's one down here, one up here, and one way up here. Which one of them is most pleasing to God?" And then the old rabbi says, "Tell me something. Which way are each of the rabbis, or each of these men on this ladder going?" He said, "Because the man that's going up the ladder is the one that's most pleasing. The ones that are doing nothing, not going anywhere on the ladder, are not pleasing to God. And the ones that are coming down the ladder are certainly not pleasing to God." So, in a nutshell, what he was saying is that it doesn't matter where you are on the ladder. It matters where you're going on the ladder. So a person new to this walk should not get so concerned about where they are on the ladder. They just should be concerned about maintaining steady upward climbing on the ladder. So as a new person into this walk, just as the Israelites were new to this walk, Another question they might have to face is, what about people's interpretations of laws? And let's say, for instance, like today we have oral Torah we have to deal with. There's the question of oral Torah. Should a new person subscribe to oral Torah? And all I can suggest to answer that question would be, if you look at the walk the Israelites had from the Red Sea to Mount Sinai, and look at all the laws that God gave to them on that walk from Red Sea to Mount Sinai, how many of them were oral laws? Well, the answer is that there was only one law given on that entire journey, and that was the Sabbath. And even though that law was given orally to the Israelites, what was it backed up by? It was backed up by actual physical evidence that God wanted that done. So what I would suggest for anybody new to this walk in regards to oral Torah is to look and see if it clearly matches up with what God is doing with you at that time. There may be a time for more oral Torah, more oral law, but at the beginning, oral law is something I think most people should not even deal with. They need to deal with the things that they can actually see in the Bible. And of course, then there's the question about what is permissible. See, I think I skipped something right here. Yeah, oral law. Here's the oral law for us. And there's a Bible right there. So that's supposed to be all the Talmud. Represent all the Talmud. So, next question would be, what should a person do when they have questions about things in regards to what God has revealed to them? And this is where we get into the situation with Jethro and Moses, and Jethro's role in helping people to understand how they should walk and what they should do in certain situations. So I want to spend a little bit of time right here on Jethro, and we'll see this. We're going to be reading a little bit of this again because from what we read in the parashah today, but I'm going to bring out a few points about this along the way. Exodus 18, verses 13 through 16, and so it was on the day that Moshe sat down to judge the people, and the people stood before Moshe from morning until evening. So when Moshe's father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, he said, "What is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone, and all the people stand before you from morning until evening?" And Moshe said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to inquire me, because people come to inquire of me, or inquire of God. And when they have a difficulty, they come to me, and I judge between one and another, and I make known the statutes of God and His laws." Well, there's some interesting words in this passage. One is, it says, because the people come to inquire of me. The word there for inquire is drash. Drash is the root word from which we get the word midrash. And a drash is to drash something is to study. And a midrash is a discussion amongst people, and sometimes can even become a heated discussion. And so if they're going along and they're drashing, and then it says, when they have a difficulty, well, the word there for get difficulty is debar, which we know is the Hebrew word for word. They have a word, they come to me. So what I'm seeing possibly in this, I may have it all wrong, I don't know, but what I'm seeing in this is that these people now are drashing over some of the things that God has revealed to them. You know, when I was raised, I was always taught that these people were fighting about someone stole my gold platter, or someone hit my chariot or my ox cart and knocked the wheel off of it, Moshe, help me. You know, against, you know, it's basically there's brother against brother fighting over physical things. But if you really look at the words there, it seems to indicate that they're probably starting to like this God that sort of led them along the way. You know, he's sort of better than the gods in Egypt. He can sort of give us water out of rocks. He can feed us food from heaven. You know, the gods over in Egypt couldn't do this. He's helped us. I mean, all has, you know, if there's a battle, all we have to do is get our leader to raise his hands and we're saved, you know. Maybe there's something about this God that we want to follow. Well, what was the purpose of the journey? The journey was to prepare the people to become the bride of God, right? So if God was smart about what he was doing, then and he knew how to lead people down a path to get them to a mindset that he could take them and make and come in covenant with them, wouldn't it seem logical that by the time they got there, they probably were in the mindset that they wanted at least know a little bit more about this God? So anyway, here they are, and they're drashing. And they're drashing about the Torah because they came to Moses because this brother said, no, it means this. And this brother said, no, it means that. No, it means this. You know, that's how Midrash goes. And so it's back and forth. And so they go to Moses and say, Moses, tell us, what does it mean? What does it mean? And Moses then reveals the statutes and the Torah to the people. Reading on here, so Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing that you do is not good. Both you and the people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out, for this thing is too much for you. You are not able to perform it by yourself. Listen now to my voice, and I will give you counsel, and God will be with you. Stand before God for the people, we talked about that earlier today, so that you may bring the difficulties to God. The word difficulties, again, is words. It's the words. You know, Moses is to bring the words before God in some of these problems so Moses himself can get the answer. Remember when the man is caught picking up sticks? God, you know, Moses didn't have the answer. He had to go to God to get the answer. So what we're seeing is that in matters of Torah, there are some things that even Moses didn't know. He had to go to God to get some of these answers. And you shall teach them the statutes and the laws and show them the way, the derech, in which they must yalak, halakha, and the works they must do. So God's saying, Jethro's saying to Moses, is that Moses, you know, you do this thing I'm getting ready to tell you, and you're going to be able to show the people the walk that they should be walking. And they're going to learn Torah in the process. Moreover, look for able men from all the people who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, hundreds, of fifties and tens, and let them judge the people. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So what God is saying, or what Jethro was saying here, if I'm on the right path here, is that Jethro is saying, big matters go to God, you know, you take care of Moses, but the small matters, you know, these judges are going to take care of. But in both cases, the matters are the same matters. In other words, we're not talking about, okay, Moses and matters pertaining to Torah, you know, you deal with those matters pertaining to broken ox carts. You let the young guy, or you let the judges take care of. That's what it's saying. The matters are the same for both. The same matters that Moses can take care of, they're saying that the judges can take care of are the same matters. It's just the severity of the matters, or the difficulty of the matters, is what Moses has to deal with, and sometimes even then, he has to take them to God. And it says, so it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. And if you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all this people will go to their place in shalom, in peace. So by following this prescription that Jethro was laying out for the people, it was going to provide shalom for the people. So if I'm on the right path on this thing, what God is saying is that you establish the judges, and the judges will help establish halakha. What I mean by that is that you've got a judge who is a captain of 10. Right? So let's say he's over 10 clans or 10 families. And you got within this 10 families, you've got a question about, can I watch TV on the Sabbath? Okay? And so this family member says, yes, I can watch cartoons. The other one says, no, I can only watch religious programming. And the other one says, no, I can watch news programming. And then another one says, no, you can't watch TV at all. So what they do, because you can't go in the Bible, you can't go in the Torah and say, you shall not turn your TV on the Sabbath. And so what they would do, they would go to this judge of 10 and they would say, okay, judge of 10, what's the ruling on this? And God said, and the judge would look at it, and he would go to the Torah and find out what he can find out from it about Torah, out of the Torah, and then he would make a judgment based on what he can clearly, what he can see in Torah, though it may not be real clear. He'll do what the best he can do, and he will apply it to the people. Well, they were getting ready to begin judging the people. Remember, they weren't there long. The judges were established for all Israel. From that point on. Well, there's no written out Torah. That's the thing. They were trying to make decisions on things that they knew about. What's that? Well, they learned about Sabbath from the manna. They may not have had very much to go on, but the judges weren't established for just a short period of time. They were established for all Israel. So you've got this situation, and these people have to make decisions. And so let's say that judge makes a decision and says, it's okay to watch cartoons on the Sabbath. Well, we may not agree with it, but what I see what this is saying is that if this is the ruling the judge makes, it stands and God supports it. Now, let's say we have a situation where you got 5 clans of 10, and they're all going to have a big winter weekend camp out or something like that, and the same issue comes up. And this is, and the issue is, can we as a group go to a movie or on our home projection system show this on the Sabbath? Well, they go there, and this clan and this judge of 50 rules and says, no, you can't. Okay, so in this case, for that particular situation where you got all 5 of these clans together, they can't watch television. But for the individual clan of just 10, their ruling is that they could. And the way I see this is that God says, that's okay. Because you follow the prescription that I said. You went to the judges made a ruling based on Torah, and this is the way I expect things to be done. And then God straightens it up in his own time. God does not come down and, you know, cause fire and hailstorm. This is just the way God intended for it to be at this point.
I think there would be peace, though, because what if the judge over the 10, there's 5 mm-hmm. of them, and all of them make different rulings?
Well, there's one judge over the 10, though. No, the judge is for that group.
Right. And then if the group has a different ruling, with the peace.
Well, I don't know.
The same kind of peace we've had worldwide all these years.
Yeah.
This minister said this, exactly like that.
Or family.
Yeah. Well, when you've got the clan type system where you had families, then there could be rulings within those families. Those families sort of hung together. But when you had things that affected a larger group, then you had a larger judge, and that judge,
so that there could be peace at that point when they're all together.
Right. But it never was intended to go a pyramid type system where the top judge made a ruling that applied to everybody down here. Because you have different situations and different things. And maybe the television thing is not a good point. But you could have, say, for instance, is ostrich good to eat? Okay, there's a question about ostrich. Can you eat ostrich? Maybe for these people, they raise ostrich. And they may have it, you know, as a food. It's very common in their family. You get over here, and these people don't even know what an ostrich is. All right? So these people might over here say, oh, yeah, definitely ostrich, bad for you. Don't know what it is, but it's got to be bad for you. And so their ruling would otherwise be a ruling that applied to these people, and I don't think that's the way God works. So anyway, I think that's what we're seeing, though, in the situation. I don't think Jethro set up a people to make rulings over petty things. I think these were significant Torah applications that God intended the judges to establish, and it would bring peace for that clan, and it would bring peace for that clan if that clan had to interact with another clan. So basically, as long as you were interacting with someone else, you had a judge over you that brought parity and equality to everybody under that particular clan, but you didn't have one up here who made decisions for everybody. Because the people needed to think for themselves. And that's the point. To get people out of a slave mentality, they've got to start thinking for themselves. And when people think for themselves, sometimes they come up with different conclusions. And what God is saying, that's okay. It may not be that it's what God says, but it's that God is saying, that's okay, because God winks at the times of our ignorance. Yes?
Okay, so that's what I was about to ask. We are assuming that God approved of it, where you say it.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying God says that's okay, because that's the system He set up.
Now, where did He say that?
Huh?
Where did He say that?
Because God says elsewhere in Torah that you are to follow the decision of the judges. Well, it doesn't say it right there, but it does say that down in Scripture, you are to follow the decision of the judges.
And so. Righteous judges.
Right. Yeah. In other words, these people were doing and making judgments based on Torah. They weren't making judgments because God delineates what type of people. Jethro says these people should be well-educated in this stuff. You know, he doesn't just say any Tom, Dick, and Harry is out there making these decisions. Well, that's what it says, though.
So God, before Mount Sinai, I was already talking to Moses and giving him what to teach to all the people as they're coming down.
I think we only have one clear Torah instruction given prior to Mount Sinai, and you know, as far as mitzvah is concerned, and that is the Sabbath. But that's not to say that the Israelites didn't know of other things, but I don't think that the matter with Jethro was given just to solve an immediate problem. I think this is what God did to solve problems for the next 3,500 years, basically. Was established a system.
So in a sense, this was where we always thought of Saul as being where man chose someone to live over.
No, this
did not.
No, this has nothing to do with ruling over you.
Well,
this is a matter of making judgments.
Right. Making judgments.
On difficult matters.
Yeah, on difficult matters. I don't know if it's the beginning of oral Torah. I think it's a point where you get where God set up a system to where people are responsible for making their own decisions in many cases. It's not
a bigger overall
law. Right. 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 For instance, I'll give you a bad example. Okay. At one point in time, most of us were under a guy who said that makeup was wrong. Okay? And he claims to have based this on Scripture. Okay? Later he changed it and said makeup was okay. All right? And he claimed to base that on Scripture. In both cases, he expected the people under him to abide by that, right? And many of us did. I never wore a bit of makeup after that. And so, so God blesses even bad decisions, I think, as long as we're doing them in a willingness of heart. So I think this is what we're seeing. And, you know, we get to a point sometimes where we think there is no authority out there. And that's not what God shows. God shows that God does place people to make decisions, but doesn't necessarily run your life. And these were things, again, that these were difficult things that a person could not figure out from Torah. This in no way says that if one person thought that the Sabbath was Saturday, and another person came down here and said the Sabbath is Wednesday, that because a judge makes a decision that it's Wednesday, that you should start keeping a Wednesday Sabbath. Because that's clear in the Bible when the Sabbath is. These are difficult things that God did not have clearly spelled out in the Bible. And mostly had to do with your walk. See, halakha encompasses more than simply what the Torah says. The halakha, the Jewish halakha, is designed to get people to come together and be able to work together and function together as a group. And it includes things that are extra biblical because God doesn't spell everything out in Torah. All right, I spent a little bit more time on that than I wanted to. All right, now, where am I? About to wrap up here. All right, so another point along the way, I don't have it up here, let me back up here. Another point along the way as we're in this walk is to realize that God did not, he was not really concerned that much about what the people believe. You don't find any place in the Bible or in the Torah discussion where they walk from the Red Sea to Mount Sinai where God said, and you must believe this. Now it does say that they did believe in God. They did believe Yahweh and they did believe Moses, his servant, after they came out of the Red Sea. But it's interesting about that word believe. The Hebrew for the word believe is the Hebrew word aman, and it's a root word. So, and we know that root words are verbs, are all verbs. So if you were to look up the word aman, you would find out that what it actually means is support through your actions. It doesn't have anything to do with this warm fuzzy, oh, I just believe type thing. It's a supporting something through action. So when it goes back and it says that they believed Moses after they went through the Red Sea, then that would indicate that they supported Moses through their actions. The word aman is the root word from which we get the Hebrew word faith, emunah. It comes from the word aman. So to have faith in something then also indicates action. You have to do something. That all ties together. It's also the word from which we get amen. And we believe that the word amen actually means so be it. And so if you're praying and you're praying that God would heal somebody and you say amen to that, what you're saying is that we're praying for this action to take place. Okay? How many times do you pray that someone will believe something? Not very often. Usually when you're praying to God, you're asking God to do something for you. And so you say amen, and you're indicating you want to see some action. So you've got to, so God in our walk is really not concerned that much about what we believe. He's more concerned about what we do. So the Hebrew walk and the Torah walk, the derech of God, is a good walk. We know that. It's not a stroll. It's not a walk in the park, because God actually expects you to take each step with purpose and actually do something. And as we study more and learn more about the Torah of God, we learn more about the character and purpose of our Messiah and more about His part in our salvation. Now, there is one more thing that I wanted to bring up here, and that is this word, derech, again. And the word dalet, resh, kaf, when you break it down to its pictographic meaning, dalet is a door. The resh means the head or the supreme or the first. And the kaf means an open hand, a palm, or a wing. And so God said when they got to Mount Sinai that He had bore them on eagle's wings and brought them to Himself. So maybe what we're seeing here is, first off, to start their journey, what did the Israelites do? They went through a door. They went into a door, and then while they were in that door, they were covered, which is basically what's symbolic of a wing. God says that, O Israel, O Jerusalem, how much I wish I could have covered you as a hen covers its chicks. And how does she do it? She does it with her wings. So that was the beginning of the journey. But as they continued on, they went down a path. They were always covered with a cloud. And His purpose was to bring them to Himself. So maybe this is what we're talking about here when we're being born on eagle's wings, because again, God indicates that in the end of days, He's going to bring us to Himself on eagle's wings. And I know that sometimes we talk about that being big 747s or a fleet of 747s or something. Well, maybe it's simply just a cloud over us that we can follow as we go along our walk. So, to finish this up, Isaiah 51 is a very appropriate verse for this. I am Yahweh your God, who divided the sea, whose waves roared. The Lord of hosts is His name, and I have put my words in your mouth. I have covered you with the shadow of my hand, my wing, my outstretched hand, that I may plant the heavens, lay the foundations of the earth, and say to Zion, you are my people. And that is God's purpose for bringing you on this walk, to ultimately be able to tell and say that you are my people.